This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to The Kevin Kelly Show, exclusively here on placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. And now here's your host, the voice of Ring of Honor, Mr. Kevin Kelly. When you're on
a holiday, you can't find. So it's going to be a big weekend for Ring of Honor. Milwaukee on Friday night at the Turner Hall Ballroom, and then in Chicago at the Frontier Fieldhouse on Saturday. And our guest this week here on the Kevin Kelly Show will be in Milwaukee and in Chicago, along with his beautiful fiancée, Maria Kanellis. Mike Bennett is our guest, and Mike, of course, is here, and you can hear him on the podcast. He's here courtesy of Mike and Maria in Wonderland, which you can find at MikeAndMariaPodcast.com. Mike Bennett, welcome to the Kevin Kelly Show. How are you?
I am fantastic. How are you?
I am good. Where are you driving right now? Where are you?
I am in Massachusetts. I'm driving from Seekonk back to home base, which is in Carver, Mass.
Carver, Mass. That's where you grew up. That's where the young Bennett came to be, correct?
That's where all the magic was happening. And that's where Mrs. and Mr. Bennett made a young prodigy.
Now, your dad is an attorney, right?
Correct. Yep.
And mom's a teacher?
She is. Yep.
What did they think of you becoming a professional wrestler?
You know, it's funny. When I first started, and I told them that this is, because I knew at 12 that that's what I was going to be, and that's what I was going to do, and I told them, and my mom said, sure, whatever you want to do. I've actually been blessed to the fact that my parents have always been, we just want you to be happy, and if you are happy, then we are happy, and there's no such thing as anything too crazy of a job or an occupation or a hobby, and so when I decided to become a wrestler, my mom was like, sure, absolutely. And my dad was a little hesitant because he thought it was a fad. He thought it was going to wear out. He was like, okay, sure. He was just kind of, baby facing me and just sure, no problem. But as of right now, I came back from London this weekend and all they want to do is talk to me about wrestling. So now that they know that it's actually a career, that they couldn't be more any more proud or happy for me. So
yeah,
they've been great with the whole thing.
Well, that is great. And, you know, there's so many stories in wrestling of where parents of all walks of life, blue collar, white collar, it doesn't matter, that the most successful professional wrestlers are the ones who, at a young formative age, said, Mom, Dad, I want to become a pro wrestler. Okay, honey, if that's what you want to be. And they never did anything to stand in their way, despite the fact that in the back of their mind, in the front of their mind, they might have been going, oh, my God, what is this kid doing? But isn't that the case? It seems like that's where the most successful pro wrestlers come from.
Yeah, and I think it's just having the confidence to be like, okay, well, if they back me on it, then maybe I'm not too crazy with it. And, the only catch was they said, because I started training when I was in high school, and at that point they said, well, if we're going to give you permission to train, which they had to because I was only 16, they said you have to promise that you'll further your education after high school and have a backup plan. And I said, to me, that was a piece of cake. I was like, no problem. If you're going to drive me to wrestling school, then I'll go to college all day long. So that was their only requirement.
And again, I think that backup plan, I know that was one of the first lessons that Jim Ross taught me in talent development was, you could never stress enough, Kevin, to these guys to make sure they have that backup plan, because the odds of them making it, the odds of you, Mike, making it as far as you did, as far as you have so far, when I look at the probably 100 or so guys in just your region alone in New England. And there's just been a handful of guys that have made it successful.
Right.
The odds were so stacked against you, you probably didn't even realize that at the time.
No, I never. You know, it's funny because you're absolutely right about the backup plan. Like, and I knew that going in. Like, the reason it was so easy for me to tell my parents, sure, I'll go to school, is because in the back of my head, I was like, I need a backup plan. Like, I need something because I think I actually heard Jim Ross do an interview where he said backup plan. Every wrestler should have a backup plan. So in my head, I was like, well, Jim Ross says that you have to do it. So I always kind of knew that's what I needed. But it's like you said, like even for me to get to where I am now, and I would still like to be more successful than I am now and pursue more and more and more and more. But even to get to where I am now, like, yeah, I've never even thought about it until recently that, oh crap, like, it's tough to get to where I am. When I did, like, the Ring of Honor seminars with not only attending but helping out now, it's like, to see all the guys that want to be in the company that we're in now, it's like, wow, yeah, it's tough. And like you said, even for my region, it's 100, 200, 300 guys who are vying all for a spot with Ring of Honor, and they're limited. So, yeah, it's tough.
So I know, and we'll talk about Maria and what kind of spell, what kind of voodoo curse you somehow slapped on this poor innocent girl to be blinded into falling in love with you. But let's go back to your training. Now you started training at 16. And did you begin training with Steve Bradley at 16?
No, I actually trained in New Bedford, Massachusetts with a guy named Brickhouse Baker, who you might be familiar with.
I know him.
I love Baker to death. He's got a good heart, but he didn't teach me really a lot. He's a local New England veteran who knows how to be a local New England veteran. But that was the only school I could find at the time. So I started there for a few months, and then I started trickling down to Bob Evans' school down in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. And so I knew in the back of my head that, like, I'm not getting to my trade here. Like, I loved it because I was getting in a ring, but in the back, I just always knew that something's off, something's not right here. And so I started, and I went to Bob, and then Bob just, you know, blew my mind with what I wasn't learning. He taught me Bob pretty much, you know, and that's why I'll never, ever say a bad thing about Bob. I know people have been on podcasts and have their opinions on Bob, but I'll never say a bad word because he is the most, him and besides Steve, Bob is the most pivotal part of my career. So, but then from Bob, I went and, you know, I learned not everything I could learn from Bob, but I wanted a different side of wrestling, and I wanted a different mindset. And Steve was training up in New Hampshire at the time, and I started traveling up with guys to do that, and I started getting booked on Steve's shows. So a lot of my training with Steve was actually at shows, where I would just pick his brain at shows, and he'd dissect my matches and whatnot. So a lot of the Steve training was always like hands-on after a match, hands-on before a match, you know, driving to a show, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I always say Bob was probably the most pivotal person in my career.
I know, and again, we talk about, you know, I mentioned earlier, before we brought you on, I started to talk about this past weekend's tryout camp for Ring of Honor, and I said, and that we're going to talk more about it later on, but that it's, you know, it's kind of like if you assembled 9 master's level educated professors in front of one class, and for 2 days straight you did nothing but talk to them about their particular field that they all want to be in, that's basically what the camp is. And that it's you know, and you started with Brickhouse Baker, and then you went to Bob, and then you went to Steve's, and that's almost like the progression from, you know, from you know, elementary school, then to secondary, and then kind of your college education was there with Steve, because that's more of the fine tuning, finishing stuff, right?
Right, and that's how I always looked at it. And I've said this to Bob, and I said, you know what, Bob, I graduated high school, and I needed to expand. And I always said Steve was college because Steve had been to the show, Steve had gone to WWE, Steve had been to Puerto Rico, Steve had been to Mexico. He'd done all those things that I needed beyond just what Bob had taught me. And I think actually Bob, you know, Bob understands, Bob gets it. Him and Steve were two totally different wrestlers. And it was that progression. It was kind of like Brickhouse Baker was kindergarten, and then Bob was elementary school through high school because he had that much knowledge. And then Steve was the college or the master's and the PhD. Like, that was to finally put a stamp on everything that I had done.
and you take something, I'm sure, from everybody in there, because I know, and we've talked about, you know, Steve, you know, I've written about him throughout the years. You know, his life ended tragically. He got messed up into drugs. For those of you that don't know Steve Bradley, he was a very, very talented wrestler at a very young age in the New England area. And Jim Cornette had seen him working shows, I think it was for Tony Rumble, and hired him to be in developmental. He was one of the first guys that was hired for developmental and went to Memphis and, you know, helped break Kurt Angle in and did a lot of great things. And over time, as body started to break down, he made some poor choices. He didn't speak up when he perhaps should have spoke up about injuries and things that were bothering him, which was kind of that old school mentality. He wound up getting hooked up into drugs and wound up basically dying of a drug overdose. And it was a tragic end. I know Steve taught you a lot in life, Mike, but what did Steve's death teach you?
It taught me that wrestling is not the end all be all. It taught me that there's more important things. And I mean, don't get me wrong, wrestling is my life. Like, besides Maria, it's what my life revolves around. But it taught me to stop taking it so seriously and to not, and not just, it just up until that point, like, I had started getting depressed about wrestling and stuff like that. And I just wasn't sure where I was going. And then, I mean, anyone who knows me, and Kevin, you know this, Steve was my idol. I admired him. I didn't admire his personal decisions, but in the ring, it was at the end all be all to me. I mean, it got to the point where in New England, some of the guys started calling me Vinny Mofo just because I would try to emulate who he was, just because I respected him so much. But when that all took place, I saw the devastation in the eyes of guys like Brandon Rock and Brian Fury and Alex Arion, who were all local guys. Alex, who was his best friend, it made me take a step back and say, like, okay, wrestling's important, but life is far more important than this, and appreciate what I had and not take it for granted.
And then, of course, you know, so in the wake of the loss of Steve, you found your way into Ring of Honor, and the journey began. But it wasn't easy right off the bat. Now, you know, immediately you come in, the prodigy, and everything was just rolled out on a red carpet for you, wasn't it, Mike?
it's what it seemed like. And if it wasn't that, I believe that's what everyone in the back believed, because it seemed like I was a target from the second I got into the company.
Now, when you say, and I'm leading you to tell the story because I know the story already. Describe what it was like when you first got there. Was there professional jealousy? Was there a little bit of the Fugazi double-sided information going around? Where, you know, how did it, and most importantly then, because you turned out okay, you're in the company and they're not, but how did that help you? Did it affect you negatively? Tell me that whole story.
You know, it was one of those instances where, looking back on it, I kind of have a different mindset. Whereas when I first started, I was kind of like, man, I don't understand. It's hard for me to say because I still don't understand it, but I accept it more than I did back then. But it was one of those things where I was brought in. I wasn't a local Philadelphia guy. I wasn't a local Midwest guy. No one really knew who I was besides you, Kevin, and Cornette, really. And so I believe at the time there was a lot of animosity toward Jim Cornette for whatever reason. And so I feel like the guy's mindset was, well, we can't go after Jim because he's more or less the boss. So we'll go after the guy who seems to be Jim Cornette's favorite, or the one that Jim Cornette brought in. Nobody seems to know. I honestly believe, and I know it's true because I actually just did Colt Cabana's podcast, and he told me, he said, no one really wanted you there. And he told me flat out, he said, I wanted to dislike you, but you made it so damn hard for me not to like you. And it was one of those things where I just thought, like, I get it now. It was this family, and here I was coming in, and I was given a good spot right off the bat. But in my head, I was saying, you can't be mad at me because I've worked 8 or 9 years on the indies, just like you guys had. And but because they didn't know who I was, they just assumed that I was this young boy right off the streets, maybe 1.5, 2 years in, had never done anything, just had a good look, and, you know, maybe the boss of the company thought he was attractive, or, you know, and so it was one of those instances where I was the punching bag, and, you know, and my style was a little bit different. I wasn't trying to reinvent the Ring of Honor style. I was just trying to do what got me to the dance, and that was be who I was. And Bob had taught me, he said, you know, when you go there, it's going to be very tough not to try to change your style and who you are. But he always gave me the analogy that if it's, you get yourself to the World Series as a closer, and it's the bottom of the ninth, bases are loaded, you're up by one run, two outs, pitch counts 3-2, and your best pitch is a fastball. You're not going to throw the curveball. You're going to go with the fastball. And yep. The fastball, if he knocks it out of the park, well, you say, well, I gave him my best pitch, and he was just better that night. But if you strike him out, you went with your best pitch. You're always going to go with your best pitch. So I was just trying to go with my best pitch, which was what I was taught and the reason I got the job in the first place. So I think there was a lot of animosity towards guys thinking I was trying to reinvent the Ring of Honor style, which I wasn't. I was just trying to be different, where I felt like at a time in a company where there was a lot of similar guys, similar characters, similar wrestlers. So, but it eventually, I always just believed, you know, stick with who you are, because in my heart, I know I'm a good person. I treat everyone the same. So I said, just be that person, regardless of how much these guys piss you off, stick to who you are. And, I believe I eventually won the whole locker room over. I feel like now I'm in a position where I can almost be a locker room leader because I've been there. I mean, besides the Roderick Strongs and the Jay Briscoes and the Mark Briscoes, I feel like I've one of the longest guys there. So it's a funny transition, but it was really just sticking to my guns and believing in who I was.
And I think the more, and you know, we talked about this from time to time, if you decided that, you know, you were going to stray away, because again, it is easy to do that because everybody right. wants to fit in no matter where you work or what you do. You want to fit in and you want to be liked. Right. And if you're in the place and you're doing your job and you're being nice to everybody and people are being crappy to you, it doesn't matter what job you have, you're going to be like, hey, maybe I should do different things. Maybe I should do what these guys do, and then they'll like me more.
Right.
And they might have liked you more, but I think in the long run, they might have lost respect for you in a weird way, you know?
And that, I absolutely agree. I think it was because I knew I would, and I would have conversations with some of my friends and with my parents, because my mom's my best friend. So whenever something would go wrong, she's always the first person I talk to. And she would always just say, just stick to who you are and they will come around. She goes, you're too good of a person. And I stuck with that. I said, you know, I can change or I can stick to who I am and stick to my guns. And because people can always see through you when you're not being true to who you are. And that goes with my wrestling too. If I try to switch it up, and I believe there are certain instances where I didn't stick to my guns in wrestling, and you know, bad things that I hated have happened in the ring. So once I just truly believe you stick to what you believe in, you stick to who you are, and if you're a good enough person, then the other good enough people will come around, and the ones who don't, well, I'm not so sure you want them in your life anyway. So
right. Mike Bennett's our guest here on the Kevin Kelly Show. You could hear Mike and Maria on their great podcast, which is a phenomenal listen. Go to MikeAndMariaPodcast.com to hear Mike and Maria in Wonderland every week, and you'll learn more about the first couple of professional wrestling. And, you know, we couldn't have the first lady of ROH on tonight, but we get, you know, the court jester, I guess, or the second fiddle.
Something.
The
guy who cleans the toilet.
Yeah. Hey, I was going to ask you, and you kind of almost brought me to the point right there. When you got away from the Ring of Honor, when you got away from the Mike Bennett style, some bad things happened. And I wanted to ask you about BJ Whitmer in Toronto.
Right.
And when, you know, pile driver on the apron, that was a departure for you. That was not something that you would have been known to do. And right. how did that affect you, and how did that change you going forward?
You know, it was one of those things where I was talking to PJ before the show, and we both kind of felt like we were in a funk, and we were both kind of down on our performances as of late, and we really wanted to steal the show. And instead of being smart about it, I came up with this idea, and in retrospect, I was like, you know what? We should have just stuck to who we were. Again, like I said, but that was an instance where I felt like the wrestling gods were looking out for me, where they were saying, because I felt like at that point I was kind of straying away in previous matches of who I was. And I think the wrestling gods used that as a way to say, hey, cut this out. You know, this isn't why you got here. This isn't who you are. Save that for someone else. And it just, you know, it changed me in a sense that, like, I've never felt that way in my entire wrestling career, and I realized I never want to feel that way ever again. Here I am I literally have someone else's health and their life in my hand, and someone that I admire and respect, consider a close friend like BJ Whitmer, and, you know, to be in the seconds or centimeters away from, you know, altering this man's life, who I love and respect so much, it made me realize that stop straying away to who you are. Stop being such an idiot. And in all honesty, I think it brought me closer to the guys in the back, because I don't think a lot of people know, but the outpour of support that I got from everybody in the back, everyone was so concerned about BJ, but they were equally concerned about me. And the texts I got from everybody just telling me, you know, do not let this screw with your head. Do not let this end you. Do not do that. I remember I spent the night with BJ in the hospital, and when I had to leave because I had to catch a flight, the last thing he said was, I'm going to be fine. I'm not mad. I love you. But if you let this ruin your career, I will be mad and I will be pissed.
I mean, that really sums it all up right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, through, you know, what could have been tragedy, it's turned out, I think, for the best. And I would say that in the wake of that, since August, everything has been going really well. I think one of the things that the knock on you originally, you know, within the locker room was that, oh, this guy's destined for Monday nights, man. He's going to be on Raw.
Right.
And when your Ring of Honor contract expired, you explored the opportunity to go there. Went down to Tampa and you had the tryout. Talk about that experience and what was that like, and why are you not on Raw? Because I don't understand it.
You know, that makes two of us.
I'll tell you the funny story. And Bob had shared this with me too. Communicating with Terry Taylor, who we were, you know, dear friend to all of us. And, hey, here's a match with Bob and Mike. And to which Terry had commented, didn't we sign him?
Yes, exactly.
It's like, no, you guys passed on him. Oh, sometimes I don't even know I don't even know the company I work for. So,
it baffles me too, but you know, I believe it was a blessing, and I take everything has a reason. And the experience itself was amazing. I think so highly of the trainers down there that put me through 3 days of hell. But I think the world of those guys. I think the world of Regal and Mercury and Billy Gunn and Bill DeMond and all those guys and JR and Gerald Briscoe, who were just people that I look up to and admire and, you know, am proud to call them my peers. But the experience was great. I got to go down with Adam Cole, who, if anyone knows anything about me and Cole, we've kind of taken this journey together with Ring of Honor. We both got signed. We both had dark matches against each other, which in turn got us jobs. Because after one of the dark matches we had, we got to the back. And Cornette said, God damn it, Jesus Christ, I think you guys just got each other signed.
Yeah. And now we're stuck with you and Cole and Maria all together.
And Maria, yeah.
Jeez.
Kind of, go figure. Who knew? But yeah, we've kind of taken this ride together. Our contracts are very, they signed them, they expired on the same time, went down to Tampa together. We both got passed out together, and then we both re-signed with Ring of Honor together. So I got to experience it with him, who was another close friend of mine. And I loved it down there. You know, I think I would do very, very well down there. I think I would thrive because I love just wrestling nonstop 24/7. I love working out. I think I would thrive at the performance center. But, the 3 days were grueling. They kicked our ass. But, you know, I loved it because I was like, this is what I want to do. I love being a wrestler. You might make me throw up, but you're never going to get me to walk away. And I just kept, it was great. And why, you know, I've heard a million different stories why it didn't happen. I was in constant contact with them trying to, you know, they told me, you know, it's all but good. You will be signed. Just contact us in 3 months. I contact them in 3 months. Same story. You're good, but we're opening up the performance center, so things are a little crazy. Contact us in 3 months. And at that point, I had a long conversation with you and Maria, and I said, you know what? This could be three more months. And we both decided, and I think me, you, and Maria kind of came up with the idea that it's in my best interest to stick with a company that is going to benefit me now and a company that I think can benefit from having. And so we both decided that this was in my best interest. So I just said, you know what, I'm not going to wait for 3 months. I'm going to stick with a company that I love. And there was still so much I had accomplished in Ring of Honor, and I still want to accomplish it. So, again, I don't know why they didn't pass on me. Talking to Mercury and all them, I was told that by all the trainers down there, me and Cole both got all yeses from all the trainers. But when it went up to Stamford, for some reason, it was not right now. So I believe everything happens for a reason, and I think that was the best thing for me. So I'm not bitter. I'm not angry. I just look forward to the next time.
And, you know, and what happens with you with Ring of Honor, I think you are on your way. I think that the this burgeoning partnership with Adam Cole, which we'll see on television this week in a tag right. team match against the Briscoes, and having Maria as the third, as the primary, depending on your point of view. Did she put this whole right. thing together? There's so many questions that we've yet to get answers on, but there's tremendous star power there.
Right.
And I think star power cannot be argued or diminished. Again, their loss is our gain. I just don't right. know. I don't know the prism with which they look at things, how they see things so differently when everybody that they value. And I said this at the camp this weekend. The one thing that you could be assured of to everybody that is here is that the ultimate decision maker in the company is here watching you. When you go to the right. WWE tryout, all the people that they hire and that they pay, they give thumbs up or thumbs down votes on everybody that's there. And then that feedback gets up to Stamford. And then if it's unanimous, those people's opinions don't seem to matter, because it's like, wait a minute, all the people that I value and I pay to be there give me right. all yeses. Maybe yeah. they're right. Maybe I should listen yeah. to them. I just don't get
exactly.
it.
Exactly. It blew my mind, because like you said, these guys are specifically hired so someone like Triple H or Vince, whoever, can focus on other things. And they're hired because they respect their opinion on talent and who to sign. And then all those guys say yes. And then for some reason it gets lost in translation yeah. or
it's not like Sharon. It's not like Sharon Osbourne on America's Got Talent. Right.
Right.
She was just the wife of the rock star. You know, she's a good right. businesswoman. She's entertaining in her own right, but it's not like she could sing or dance or play a musical instrument or do anything. But she says, oh, yes, I like so-and-so. It's a gut feeling. I just know it when I see it. I just know talent right. when I see it, Mike.
Right.
I just don't get it. But you know what? I don't care, because whenever I have you guys on TV, I know it's going to be good. I love that match you had with Jay Briscoe. I know that, but I got to ask you about Maria. I just got to do it, because how the hell did you pull this off? How did you do it? You're a nice. Is it because you're a nice guy? Is that what it is?
I don't think it's that. I don't. I still question. I still wake up and then roll over and I see her there and I'm like, really? Yeah, that happened. All right, cool. But I don't know. I mean, I've known you a good amount of time now, Kevin, and it's like, I honestly, for people who don't know Maria, she's as sweet of a person as she is beautiful, and I just, like, it's so hard for me to put in words because, like, I hold her in such a high regard, and I put her on this pedestal that which absolutely belongs on. I don't know how I did it. I met her at a wrestling show. We talked. We have very similar personalities, and it was just it was all golden from there. And you know, we have very same mindsets. We have similar goals. We have the same sense of humor. We have the same views on everything in life, and it just clicked. But you know, the people always say, "Oh, Maria's so pretty. Maria's so good looking. How did you end up? You know, how did that happen?" And I always look at it like, she's pretty, she's gorgeous, but like Maria as a person makes me step back and say, how did I get that? Because it, her as a person, unless you've had the privilege of sitting and talking to her, it's kind of hard for me to explain, but she's just such a wonderful human being.
Yeah. When, you know, Delirious and I have had opportunity to talk with her, and the conversation ends, and we'll reconvene later and we'll talk about it. And the one thing that we take from that conversation is how smart and how talented she is.
Right.
You know, to me, her beauty and everything else, to me, that takes a back seat. When you have somebody who is that smart, who is that talented, who has the big picture in mind at all times.
Right. Yep.
That to me is her biggest takeaway. That's why it's like, how the hell did you do this? Don't you know
exactly.
Bennett? Jeez, Alou. That's a voodoo curse. Some sort of, you know.
I went to the doctor. I said, what's the good potion that you did? So she won't know what hit her. But
that's
it's like you said, like, she has helped me in my career in the past 2.5, almost 3 years we've been together than I've had. And like her mind for not only wrestling, but just entertainment and everything. Like, I don't think I would have been, she just helps me with camera angles and promos and, you know, just everything. Just, it's a mindset. It's the things in wrestling that matter that nobody thinks about that she has helped me out with so much. And like you said, she sometimes sits and rambles stuff off to me and I'm like, I'm so envious that you can think of that stuff right off the top of your head. And, it's just, like I said, she is literally the greatest thing that ever happened in my life.
And, so the big date is when?
It's October 10th of this year.
October 10th, the wedding.
Quickly approaching.
Yes. So yeah, that's why everybody has to listen to Mike and Maria in Wonderland each and every week. They're great podcast. That you could find out all the wedding plans and what's going on to see if Mike screws it up before October 10th. You know, I mean, I'm sure that there are guys everywhere that are just like, you know, throwing darts at the Mike Bennett picture on the wall right now. Anything we could do. That's going to be an exciting day. What did your mom and dad think of Maria?
Oh, they think the world of her. Again, it's one of those things where they're like, you're sure you want to marry my son, right? You're sure?
Now they and again, I would imagine that your parents are very open-minded, but did they have a problem with the fact that Maria had posed in Playboy or had done anything in her career? They didn't have a problem with any of that?
None whatsoever. I had told them, this is the girl I'm dating. I introduced her to them, and they fell in love with her. And like I said, my parents are very open-minded when it comes to everything. And they were like, and then they met her and they were like, okay, well.
Yeah. I mean, she could be an axe murderer and you'd meet and talk to her. It'd be like, hey, she's a really nice, smart axe murderer. You know,
she's a really nice axe murderer. Yeah,
she is. So. I think she's misunderstood. So Hey, you said that you and Maria see eye to eye on a lot of things. And one of the things I like to do on this show, and we talk about other stuff than just wrestling, and you kind of took us behind the curtain a little bit, so I was glad you did that. But you and I and Maria, the three of us, you two are on one side on a lot of issues, and I'm on the other side on a lot of issues. I lean much more conservative, and you guys are much more liberal about things. But I would say that I think our viewpoints are more and more similar all the time. And I'm coming around to your point of view on a couple of things. And you've been very outspoken about like gay marriage. And we've had some good conversations about that. And at first I was like, well, I just think it doesn't matter. I just think, you know, the government should be out of everybody's business. But if, you know, marriage is between a man and a woman. But now, after thinking about it for a while, I'm starting to realize it really doesn't matter, does it? And where did that viewpoint come from? Was that something you always believed? How did you kind of get, you know, did your parents help shape your point of view? Where did that come from? Because I know for me, I was very influenced by my father, who is like super uber conservative. And, you know, and so I kind of always saw things through his prism. And I still do on quite a few things. I'm very, especially in fiscal stuff, I'm very much like, get the government out of my money. And when they can manage their house, then they can come have some of mine. Until then, leave me alone.
Right. You know, I've always been a very liberal person on social issues, just because my family is very liberal on social issues. And so, but throughout my dad has always been a very big civil rights movement kind of fanatic, you know, and it just kind of, I'm a huge Martin Luther King fan. And so I've always been big on civil rights, equality for all, no matter what, everything. That's always been huge in my family. So when the whole issue of gay rights came about in gay marriage, it was always just a no-brainer for me. It was like, equality for everyone, equality for everyone. And it always just aggravated me that people would want to interfere, where I was like, why does it matter? Why do you care? What, it doesn't affect anything that you do. And we've learned through history that if we try to suppress people's rights and their equality, that you're probably going to be on the wrong side of history. And then, as I started progressing through life and through wrestling, a good buddy of mine, Guy, is gay. And so then it really hit close to home, because at that point I hadn't really, you know, been close to anyone who's gay. And then, you know, then you see the effects it has on people that you're close to. And so then it becomes even more of a crusade for you. So, I think just the fact that my parents always instilled on me equality to everyone, treat everyone the same. And then that mixed with having a friend who's gay. And then it just kind of became a crusade of mine, where I was like, you know what? No, this is something I truly and firmly believe in. So I'm going to pursue it. And I really don't care if people disagree with me. I'm going to be outspoken and speak how I feel about it.
And it's a very educated conversation. I've seen you have some Twitter debates with people. And again, you always take the high road, despite everybody else seemingly displaying their ignorance in just full bloom. I mean, there's just no mistaking it. And again, I know that we've had some you know, very just philosophical, questionable debates about different things, and that's fine. Do you find that people are more open-minded or more narrow-minded now?
I feel as of late, people are far more open-minded. I feel like it's really becoming an issue that's hopefully going to become a non-issue. I think a lot of people, and I think it's because of a younger generation coming up where being gay is just accepted. So now it's turning into a point where it's like, no, this has to be accepted for everyone. And a lot of people's views are outdated. And I feel a lot of the, like you said, I have debates online, and I feel like a lot of people agree with me when I talk about it. It's like, yes, this is, and sometimes I wonder, because it seems like as of late, there's more people who are like, yes, this needs to be equality. So I'm curious as to who is against it now and what their viewpoints are, because I never really hear a good concrete argument on why it shouldn't be allowed, or I never hear a good concrete argument on why it should be banned. It's always just, it comes down to, well, it's not good for our children. But then in my head, I'm like, oh, that's not your decision. It's not our government's decision to decide how we teach our children and this right. and that. So
I heard a troubling stat the other night, and it was the odds of, and you talk about the odds stacked against, you know, and your support of the civil rights movement against an African-American child born today.
Right.
The odds of that child making it from conception to his or her 18th birthday with two married parents is about 3%. And that takes into account abortion rates, which are astronomically high, which I think I support the woman's right to choose. I just think somewhere along the way, there's got to be better education to help these girls make better decisions, you know, because
right.
it's just the numbers are out of control. And then
right.
when you look at the divorce rate amongst, right. you know, which is 50%. And then you look yeah. at just attrition of life through murders, because there's so much crime in the African-American communities, and that's a tragedy. And I wish that in the wake of Martin Luther King, that, you know, somehow we could break the change. I think that the cyclical nature of drugs and violence in the inner cities, that somehow these people just can't break free from. So that it winds right. up that if both parents are still married by the time the child has gone from conception to 18 years old is 3%. That to me
that's
is just
wild.
That's an American tragedy right there. They talk about
absolutely
everything else that's going on in this world, and there are so many bad things all around the globe. But here in our own house, in our own borders, that there are people who are starving, that there are people who are homeless, that there are people who yep. need. This is the greatest, most charitable nation on earth, and we know that because we see it all the time. I just wish right. I wish more of that was done and talked about, and that we could do things that would really make change. That's why I say get the government out of marriage, get the government out of my bedroom, get the yeah. government out of trying to help people, because they just find a way to screw it up. Let people just right. be. Stop putting labels right. on people. Let people just be, and then we can just be, and everything will be fine. We'll take care of each other.
We end up hurting ourselves more by butting into everything than we do by just letting it be, because then we set regulations and rules, and then it just turns into breaking the rules and regulations, and then it always spirals out of control, and they focus way too much time and money on things that are not going to be beneficial for everyone. And I agree with you on that 100%. It's the money and focus of our government is spent on the wrong things 90% of the time.
I think that's the one issue right there, where whether you're a conservative, liberal, wherever you are in the political spectrum, I think everybody agrees. And I think that's going to be the uniting point of this country, actually. Because I talk yeah. to, you know, people who are, you know, liberals, such as, you know, you and Maria, and I think we have a lot of things in common. And instead of trying to point and look the other way and say, no, that people over there, they're wrong. Wait a minute. It's right. not a straight line. It's a circle. And I think we both
exactly.
kind of, we wind up on the same point of view on a lot of things. And that's why it's always been, you know, good debate when we've talked, because I think there are a lot of things that we have that are in common, as opposed to just being opposite, because you're on the traditional left and I'm on the traditional right,
right,
you know, I'm in the traditional get
right.
government out of the way.
Right. Exactly. No, I feel like it's one of those, I think the biggest problem that we face right now is our government is so separated between liberal, conservative, Democrat, Republican, that it puts a divide in people. But I've noticed that when I actually have good, like you said, when you see debates online where I have to take the high road, it's because people aren't invested in having like good, healthy debates. And when you have one, you realize that, all right, we're not that far apart or that much. There's not that big of a gap as we originally thought. It's probably quite simple to come on an agreement, or, you know, all right, we may disagree on these two things, but on the last eight things we talked about, we actually do agree on. So, and that's what I think, it's more of a, let's sit down and talk and figure out where we agree, as opposed to, no, we just disagree 100%.
Yeah. And again, that's how, you know, this democracy of ours here in America works. That's, you know, that's why,
exactly.
and you really, again, taking from your parents, I think is great. The lessons that they've taught you are well-founded. And I would say they have done a pretty fair job of raising a pretty good kid. So you have my respect, absolutely. I don't always agree with the things that you and Maria do when you're on my television. As I cast a wary glare. Yeah, low blowing people, you know. But it was great when Romantic Touch and the chocolate went flying because Steve Carino got a piece of candy. He was very happy about
that. Did he get some? Okay, good.
He did. One flew right, landed right on him. He's like, oh, look at this. And I look over and he's eating candy. I'm like, what are you doing? He's just landing on me.
I have to say that the dynamic between you and Steve is one of the best I've heard in a commentary duo. It is fantastic. And whenever I watch the show, that's usually the highlight for me.
Yeah, we have fun. I generally let Steve, get the line out. And then I just let it sit there and I don't say anything.
Right.
Make sure everybody catches that. Okay, he said it. Yep. And then we move on. Hey, Mike, listen, I could spend weeks talking to you, man. It's great. But I do want to let you get on with your night. Promise me that before the wedding, you and Maria will both come back on so we could chat about specific wedding details, seating charts, taffeta. I want to know about the bridesmaids' gowns. I want to know what the groomsmen are wearing.
Everything.
I want to know all the details, okay?
Absolutely. If you'll have us, we'll be there.
All right. And we will see you Friday night in Milwaukee, Saturday in Chicago, a big weekend for Ring of Honor action. And Michael Bennett, thanks for being our guest here on The Kevin Kelly Show.
Thank you so much, Kevin. I appreciate it.